You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
People, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. but they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, our shame. Pour libation too to those ancestors, because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, our shame. Pour libation too to them, because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation. I shame. Pour libation to those ancestors, because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation. Those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation. I shame. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born, for they are the ones that you must teach, and you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, for they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation. Ashe, Ashe, Asheo.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
We sure ain't got no respect for each other. If I'm good in one thing, I don't respect you for being good in another. If your money's a little bit longer than mine, right away you want to disrespect me and treat me unkind. So until we learn to respect each other, don't pat me on my back and call me your brother. You see, we think ain't nobody got no sense but us. And we're something special because we have to get out of touch. We'll help each other to get just a wee little bit. But if I think you're gonna make it, baby, that's it. So until we learn to really help each other, don't pat me on my back and call me your brother. Y'all been telling me who would cheat you, saying it's the devil who's coolest to me. But the biggest key I ever got, a brother gave it to me. We think ain't nobody got no sense but us. It's all right to tell the truth, but not on us. We look at the phone and everybody else, and I bet that's why we can't see what's wrong with ourselves. So until we start being honest with each other, remember, your daddy ain't my daddy and my mother ain't your mother. So don't be patting me on my back trying to put your hand in my pocket by calling me a cotton picking brother. Yeah.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my sisters and brothers, and welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. My name is William Rogers, and I am your host for the evening. We welcome all of you. Thank you so much for tuning in to our program. As you know, we are here every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time and from 8 to 10 Eastern Time. We are broadcasting on the platform of the Time for an Awakening Network. This is a call-in format. You can give us a call here at 215-490-9832. I repeat, 215-490-9832. And you can call with your questions, comments. We have a very dynamic program for you this evening. We have a dear friend, a dear brother of our community, a very powerful pillar that stands in our community that's going to talk with us a little bit about some things as we try to move on in the progress of our people. As you know, the Black Reality Think Tank is a historical research network. It is designed to teach, to learn, to empower, and to provide information relating to the history of African people throughout the world. And we use this radio podcast as well as the other podcasts that we offer on this network. We use our website and other forms of social media as tools to support our mission. Our content and our focus is the journey of our ancestors. Our goals and objectives is to understand the past, dissect the present, and support implementing a meaningful future for generations to come. So we welcome all of you here. That is what we are doing each Tuesday evening. We have other programs on this network as well. I'll talk to you about those very shortly. But we appreciate you for being here with us here this evening. We have both an internet audience and we do have a telephone audience, and you are welcome to listen via the telephone. If you are going to listen via the telephone, I would ask that you mute your telephone until you are called upon. Any slight movement for those who are on the telephone can be picked up in this system, and so we would like for you to please mute your telephones. And then when the time comes, or if you wish to say something, you can then unmute and talk. But in the meanwhile, please do that for any of you who may be listening or plan to listen via the telephone. We have, as I said, a dynamic discussion tonight. We have had a very good discussion on last Tuesday. We talked about some of the spiritual realms of our culture and our life and our history. And we had a very dynamic conversation. All of our programs are archived. You can go to the Time for an Awakening platform at www.timeforanawakening.com. www.timeforanawakening.com. And go to the search portal and put in the Black Reality Think Tank. And you will get a list of all of our programs, and that you can listen to them 24/7. We have been on this network for about 5 years. We've been doing these podcasts for about 8 years. And hopefully, if the ancestors are willing and the good Lord is willing, we're going to continue to move right on. And that's kind of what our conversation is about tonight, is getting people to listen. The title of our program is Black Man, Listen. And I must say, I borrowed the title from a very powerful document that was written by the great Richard Wright called White Man, Listen. And that was written back in the 50s, 1959, when he wrote that. But it is a powerful document, and it speaks to some of the same things we're going to speak to now, even though it was written in the late 50s, 1958, 59, it was published. It is a collection of his essays, but it was something that I thought would be really appropriate for us here tonight as we talk about what we want to meet and speak on today. So with that, I am going to go into one of our traditional customs that we do here on the Black Reality Think Tank, and that is do an ancestral profile. We always must give honor to those whose path that we follow, those whose shoulders that we stand on, and we thank them and give honor to them. And that is a very major part of what we do here, because we only walk in the path of the ancestors. So tonight I'm going to talk about a very dear brother who recently moved to the ancestral world. His name is Melvin Van Peebles. He was an actor and director. He was born on August 21st, 1932, in Chicago, Illinois, to parents Edwin Griffin and Marion Peebles. He grew up in suburban Phoenix, Illinois, where his father worked as a tailor and graduated from Thornton Township High School in 1949. Van Peebles spent a year at West Virginia State College before transferring to Ohio Wesleyan University, where he graduated in 1954 with a degree in English literature. Van Peebles joined the Air Force 13 days after graduation, serving for 3.5 years. In 1956, he married the German actress and photographer Maria Marx. They lived in Mexico for a brief period, where he painted portraits before coming to the United States in 1958, where he worked as a cable car grip man in San Francisco, California. In the early 1960s, Van Peebles published 4 novels and 1-story collection in French and another short film. The name of the short film was Cinq Sept Ballets. I would like to remind those who are listening via the telephone, if you could please mute your phone, I would greatly appreciate it. Please mute your phone if you are listening via the telephone. Just a second. I have to. Sometimes we can do it from here. I would prefer that you do it on your own, but if not, then we will mute it from here. I'm sorry about that for the interruption, but sometimes that is a distortion that is very difficult to override when you're talking. But nevertheless, he made his first full-length feature film called The Story of a Three-Day Pass. And he did this in 1968, and it caught the attention of Hollywood producers who mistook him for a Frenchman. Van Peebles' first Hollywood film was the 1970 Columbia Pictures comedy Watermelon Man, starring Godfrey Cambridge. The movie tells the story of a casually racist white man who suddenly wakes up black and finds himself alienated from his friends, family, and job. In 1970, Van Peebles was also scheduled to direct filming of the Powell Ridge Rock Festival, which were later banned by court injunction because of the open use and the selling of drugs. After Watermelon Man, Van Peebles became determined to have complete control over his next production, which became the groundbreaking Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song, which was released in 1971. It was privately funded with his own money, and in part by a $50,000 loan from Bill Cosby. Sweet Sweetback, which was made with a primarily non-professional cast and crew, was a huge success with African-American audiences, and it pioneered the blaxploitation film genre. Van Peebles directed, he scripted, and he edited the film. He wrote the score, and he directed the marketing campaign. The film, which in the end grossed $10 million, was among many others acclaimed by the Black Panthers for its political resonance with the black struggle. Van Peebles never made another film, and by the 1980s had become an options trader on the American Stock Exchange. He continued to work with others, however, in theater and film. He was nominated for 3 Tony Awards in 1972 for Best Book, which is a screenplay for a musical, and Best Score as both composer and lyricist for the play Ain't Supposed to Die a Natural Death, and in 1973 as Best Book Musical for Don't Play Us Cheap. We've had an opportunity to play some of the music from the Ain't Supposed to Die a Natural Death here on our discussion at the Black Reality Think Tank. In 2005, Van Peebles was the subject of a documentary titled How to Eat Your Watermelon in White Company and Enjoy It. Also in 2005, Van Peebles was the subject of the documentary Unstoppable, which also featured Ossie Davis and Gordon Parks as pioneering actors and directors. Melvin Van Peebles passed away on September the 22nd, 2021, at his home in Manhattan, New York. He was 89 years old. Van Peebles is survived by sons Mario and Max and daughter Marguerite. Melvin Van Peebles, one of my kind of brothers. I wanted to definitely use him because I think it kind of speaks a little bit to what our conversation is about. It's about brothers that don't give up the fight, who continue to stay on the battlefield, regardless of age or condition. They just keep on fighting because they know that we have to work to make a change. And very clearly, our guest tonight is one of those brothers. He's one that's been on the battlefield, keeps on doing it, regardless of how old he gets or whatever the circumstances of his health may be. He knows that the liberation of our people is a continuous, ongoing fight. I also understand that here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which I'm not a native of, but I came here with enough time to meet and embrace a lot of wonderful people. And one of those people that I embrace is a brother by the name of Ron Johnson, who went to the ancestors on Sunday of this week. And it's a very good, I won't stop to go into a lot of detail. We probably will do him as an ancestral profile in the future. But there's a wonderful article on him that's in a Dane County newspaper called, I think you can find it on the website, dane.com. One of our good brothers also produces a program here on the Time for Awakening Network. Brother Oshiemi Adelabu posted that today on the Facebook. And so you might want to take a look at that. But he was a powerful brother. He was 71 years old. He'd been on the battlefield. He had had a couple of battles with illness and sickness, but he didn't give up. And he kept on fighting. And that's, again, the subject, the spirit of the subject that we want to talk about today. I just also heard, in light of this discussion about staying on the battlefield, was the Reverend Jesse Jackson, who had previously battled with COVID a couple weeks back here. He also had an accident on Monday, I think it was, at Howard University. He was over there helping protest a student movement for students who were fighting for better conditions at Howard University. And he fell, and he bumped his head. And he was taken to a hospital in D.C. For overnight observation. And on today, this morning, he got up. He said he's all right. And the doctor said, I'd rather like to keep you a little bit longer. He said, nope, I got some work to do. And he got up and went back over to Howard University to continue that struggle with those students that are having some extreme difficulties over at Howard. That's the spirit that we are talking about tonight. And we've got some brothers like that. And what we have to do now is prepare that next generation with that same kind of fire and with that same kind of vigor to get out here, because this war is an ongoing war. It has been vicious. Has been going on a long, long, long time, and it is not going to stop. And there are things that have gone along with it as we've been battling this COVID-19 situation. We don't know where that's going to end up, how it's going to end up. We don't know what's going to do. We are still fighting racism and white oppression and white terror, police terror, economic struggles and policies and politics. And it's a continuing battle. And like many of you, I have grandkids coming. I've got great grandkids. I even got one great great granddaughter. She's 3 years old. And I just think about the future for them and where what that's going to be like. So I have to stay out here. I've got some issues, health issues as well, but I don't care. I'm going to keep going. I'm reminded of the word of the Charles Hamilton Houston, the brother who was the mentor for Thurgood Marshall. He said they asked him about stopping and slowing down because he said it was bad for his health. He was going to keep going. And he said, if you don't, you know, you're going to kill yourself. That's what the doctors told him. He said that he made a quote that I think about all the time. He said, I'd rather die on my feet than to live on my knees. And so eventually it did take him out, but he kept on the battlefield. So again, that's where we're going tonight. Our guest is one of those brothers. I met this brother back when I first came to Milwaukee in 1983. I came here in 83. I probably met him around 84. I was invited to speak at a facility, the club organization on Martin Luther King Drive here in Milwaukee called the Art Fellows. And I was there doing a Black History presentation. And he was in the audience along with another very good friend that I worked with here in Milwaukee by the name of Tommy Bourdain. And so he was here. He was there at that event. And we met. And from then on, we have always done things together. We worked. We helped start organizations and worked in projects. We've taken trips. We've taken kids to boot camp. We've done numerous things together. And I'm so happy to know this brother. And he has impacted my life. He has a wonderful family, a very large, wonderful family. But that's okay. He's a wonderful father, an example of fatherhood in our community. He has an organization that he still operates called For My Brothers, and I've been a part of that. He's invited me many times to appear in programs that he has promoted and produced. And you can find him any Saturday morning down at a place called Coffee Makes You Black, sitting there with his books and his cards, and he has created a set of greeting cards, powerful images, where brothers can pass these cards out to each other and praise each other and pat them on the back and be truthful about calling them their your brother. That song that we played in the beginning with John Anderson said, don't pat me on the back and call me your brother, and then at the same time put your hands in your pocket. Well, we can do that because there are some people that are not like that. And Tony has created this set of cards that he uses to pass out and to people. I remember when he started it, it's just amazing at the work my brother has done over the years here in Milwaukee. And guess what? He's still doing it. He has not stopped, hasn't slowed down, and he keeps on doing it. So we're going to talk about that because tonight we're asking the question or making the statement, black man, listen, please, listen, listen. You must do that. You have to listen, and we have to pass that on to that generation coming behind us. They've got to hear us. They're not hearing us. If they were hearing us, they wouldn't be doing some of the things that we see that are taking place in the streets of America today. They got to listen. There's a process to this liberation freedom idea. And they have to follow what the elders have done and where they've been and let them tell you. And it hasn't all been success. And we may not be doing a whole lot now that's successful in terms of things, but we're fighting. We're trying. And you have to understand that you've got to wait, and you got to follow that process. You can't buck the system. And when I say system, I'm talking about just the system of the world. You can't buck that, and you can't do that. And so tonight we're going to talk about that a little bit and see if we can put some words out there for some of our young brothers to be able to grasp and learn from. So with that, excuse me. Let me introduce you, a very dear friend, a very powerful community brother, a pillar in our community, Brother Anthony Courtney. Good afternoon, Brother Tony.
Fine, Brother Bill. How you doing?
Man, hanging in there, man. Hanging in there.
All right, I understand it.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us tonight. You know, you and I have done some, man, we have been a long path together in projects along with you and other folks that you work with. But I do definitely recall all the many things that we've tried to do here in this community. And I appreciate you, man. I really do. And so happy that you could come on tonight and talk about this whole project that we were looking at, trying to get our younger brothers to listen to what we're telling them. You know, we're not joking. You know, that's like, I listened. I had to listen to my elders. But at the time that I was coming up, it was a different groundwork, just like it was with you. My father used to use Saturday evenings about 7 o'clock to talk to me. And he would be winding down his day on Saturday, and he'd go in there in the refrigerator and get him a glass and pour him some little tawny port wine, little red wine in the glass, come back in the living room, sit down. And when he did that, I knew what was happening. I said, I do not want to hear that. I do not want to hear this. And I like them, I ain't want to hear that. But everything he told me, I hear it today, and it was true. And he would sit down, and he'd tell me, he said, sit down, Bill, let me talk to you. And I said, oh, man. And a lot of times during those years, Saturday afternoon, evening was the best, with all the cowboy movies used to come on. And I used to want to watch the cowboy movies on Saturday evening. I think it was Gunsmoke, Paladin, Have Gun Will Travel. I want to watch all that. I didn't want to hear that. But anyway, I had no choice. I wouldn't dare not do it. So we've got to get back to that today and work with our boys. So, Tony, tell me a little bit about what you're doing, some of the things you're doing right now.
Well, basically what I'm doing right now, you know, I spent a lot of time at Coffee Make You Black since it's been back open.
Right.
And it's about trying to renew a lot of the people who used to come through, because it's a great atmosphere for dialogue our community. You meet all kinds of people that come through there of all kinds of ages, and especially a lot of black youth that I talk to just about all the time, mm-hmm. giving them a different way of looking at what they're trying to do. It's a daily process that we have to deal with. And when I say black youth, I'm talking about anybody 50 on down to 18.
Right, right.
Because now I'm 75 years old, and some of the things that I see now I'm able to pass on to them to give them a chance to get it done the right way the first time. Of course, they're going to go through it their own way. But at least they have some insight, and just like the things that were told to me
right.
about elder from elder black men and black women, it takes a period of time to see it.
Right, right, exactly right. You know,
yeah.
And so let's get right on into the heart of this. What is it that we are needing to tell our young people that they're not listening to us right now? What is it that they need to hear? Let's set the state of affairs in the beginning. What do they need to hear?
Well, one of the things that I share with them is that it's a little thing that I wrote in this little pamphlet called Superstar on the Losing Team.
Right, I remember that.
right, and basically what it says in terms of how we function as black men is that while men of other races compete against each other, German, Jews, French, Swedes, Polish, Irish, Koreans, they compete against men of other races and compete against us. But it seems like we are the only one in the equation that just simply competes against ourselves. And I don't think we've been told that we need to compete against men of other ethnic groups for our way of looking at the world. Because each group has their way of looking at the world. They move to get everything they can for their people. You know, all the resources right. And
right.
So we have to...
Tony, hold on just a second. We've got some feedback. If there's anyone that's listening via the phone and well as having your computer on, you're going to get some... we're going to get some terrible feedback on here. So if you could please either... let that either turn off the computer, or either you can listen just via the internet. It would be greatly appreciated, because we're picking up that feedback right now. It's reverberating in our speaker's voice. Okay, Tony, so try it again.
Okay. So what I basically tell them as young people is that if you don't want to run your own world, ain't nothing in your life gonna ever make sense. Because you'll always be going to another man that don't look like you to ask him to give you something. Mm-hmm. And this where we find ourselves constantly asking somebody else to resolve our problems in our community. And that which we have to do ourselves. Because if our youth don't see us resolving our own problem, then why should they listen to us as men? Why should they want to grow up to be us?
Okay. Okay.
So one of the things that I share with them, one of the first things is about how we need to begin to eliminate what I call unification rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that, Bill, is oftentimes we use, and how we refer to each other is we use other people's definitions, and what that does, it really divides us. Let's say, for instance, I talk to a lot of young men who come in, and they've recently got out of the penitentiary for a short period of time, or a year or more, and they refer to themselves as felons. And so what I do is I say, no, you're not a felon. So you committed a felonious act. You paid your debt to society. You weren't born a felon, and you won't die a felon.
Right.
So stop using that to go ahead and define yourself, because what it does, it gives a negative connotation, and a lot of them still, they've used that, so I get them to dismiss that. A number of them come in, and a lot of times they will sit there with me or talk to me because I do these personality profiles for them. I will do this thing called acrophonology that gives them the positive side of their names, and they sit there in awe because they be trying to figure out, how did I know all of this about them? Well, it's an old science, and I know you probably remember Marvell Denson, who brought it to Milwaukee in 84. He was on NOV radio for a number of shows. A parapsychologist, and he would just take your name and break it down and tell you all about your personality.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And the positive sides. And it was the negative sides, but I forgot all those negative sides, and if I didn't, I wouldn't tell you anyway. But anyway, I use the positive side to uplift the brothers and sisters that come through there. And this is, it's all about lifting the spirit in our community at this time. Right?
Right.
And that's the approach that we have to take, because everybody is searching for happiness. Some mm-hmm. people think it's going to come through money. Some think it's going to come through status. Some think it's going to come through power. But what happens is happiness is not for sale, and you can't get it in either one of those ways, because you'll always be worried about how what's going to happen when you lose it.
Exactly.
Because you never can get enough power, never can get enough money, never can get enough status, and you got to be trying to maintain it. Because if that's who you decided you are, then you're always looking for somebody to take that from them and take that from you. And a lot of times it keeps you from treating people the way they should be treated, the way you would want to be treated if you didn't have it. So I try to give them a different insight in terms of, what they've been seeing, what they're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What I try to do,
I talk to a lot of brothers that come through and they tickle me.
Yeah.
They say, they come through and they'll talk and they'll be talking about personal things. And I ask them sometime, I say, you married? They say, no. I say, well, you got a significant other? Yeah. How long you been with her? Well, we've been together 13 years. Man, you married.
Mm-hmm.
What else you want to call it? And I tell a lot of the brothers, one of the things I try to get them to understand is just simple things. If you've been with somebody at that time, you're actually married. And what happens is you maybe need to go ahead and get it done legally, because if you wind up in the hospital, that woman or that you're with will have nothing to say about the treatment that you will receive in that hospital if you're not married. And if she winds up there, you will have nothing to say about the treatment that she gets
right.
if you're not married. Because I know when I was in the hospital with my health challenges, My wife could stay right there. She could research what they was talking about giving me, and she would say, no, you're not going to give him that. So that's just some of the little simple kind of things that that take place. You know, right. Other things that I go ahead and talk with them about is the need to organize as men. You know, we've been talking about that forever. and you know, we the five, I think it was the fathers of myself, James Hall, who's an attorney, Oceani, you, and I think it was a Ken Little.
Ken Little was involved. Yeah, sure was.
Rocky Cole. We were the first five that developed 100 Black Men.
Right, sure we did.
And what we did is because we caught it in its early stages when 100 Black Men was being developed, and it was like $1,000 joining fee.
Right.
But what we did is we turned it into a $60 joining fee.
You sure did.
Remember that?
That's right.
And we allowed our brothers to join as long as they didn't have a felony that would involve children.
Mm-hmm.
But anything else that a brother had did, you know, I mean, we scrutinized it, you know, we didn't want you to have to kill nobody, but we allowed for brothers, at a time, I think our membership went all the way up to over 100 brothers.
Yep, we sure
had
did.
Any number
we sure
of
did, well over there. 100.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And the thing about it that is so interesting is that it was a diverse group. We had all different economic standards. We had professional brothers, as you said. We had the grassroots brothers, you know, and they were all willing to work and do what was necessary. So every mm-hmm. Monday evening, when we used to have it at the QF&H, diner,
right.
You couldn't get in there with so many people. And I know that's a different time, a different area. And that was the next question I wanted to ask you. You've had a kind of like, well, you know, those of us who've been doing a lot of this kind of stuff, we've had a plethora of tools that we used to try to get to some of these young men. Some of them were tools that we created ourselves. Some of them were tools that we borrowed that had been used before. And it's so interesting because I remember so many. I remember, for instance, when you decided to do the manhood camp. And right. we would get these boys on the weekend and get the parents to agree, and they agree. And we would take them. We took them up to a park somewhere. I don't remember where that park was, but it was way up in the woods somewhere. And they couldn't have candy. They couldn't have potato chips. They couldn't eat anything like junk. Couldn't watch TV. Couldn't watch any music. These are the headphones. Those are pod things were coming out. Those iPods had just started to come out. And we got those kids there. And what I noticed is that a lot of them grunted, say, oh, man. You know, but they participated. You got them up early in the morning and ran them around the park. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't they cook their own dinner and breakfast?
We did the cooking for them.
Okay, we did that.
But those of us who were elders, I don't know if we was quite elders at that time, but we was getting close. We did the cooking, and then what we did is we brought in men that were at least 20 years younger than us,
right?
To get them up in the morning. We would tell them, like, they come in on the Friday night, and we said, look,
right.
This is where this is going to work. You can stay up as long as you want. But at 6 o'clock in the morning, you're gonna be getting up.
Exactly.
So a lot of them would be messing around at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning because there would be about 20, 25 boys, and you know, a lot of them meeting each other for the first time, and they talking about each other and wrestling and stuff. But come 6 o'clock, we'd have people like Ben Watson, Terrence Ray, Reuben Hopkins,
right.
A number of other brothers would come in and get them up out that bed.
That's right.
And then the other thing, Bill, is like yourself who made presentations, Nate Stampley, Oshi, I think we had Teju was out there at what time. They had, and they watched videos like Roots, and we would tell them because what they wanted to do was go to sleep. And the only way they could go to sleep is if they could stand up and go to sleep.
Right, I remember that.
And so the next night, when we told him it was time to go to bed, we didn't have no problem.
Mm-hmm. So the question then, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but I just wanted to, go ahead. I'm sorry, you want to say something?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say the question then, and I don't want our audience just to think that we're talking about the good old times. There's a reason for this discussion. And the question is, how would you evaluate that meeting and coming out of that event as we moved on with these young boys? Because this was just one of many. How would you evaluate something like that? What was the benefit that you saw in that program?
Well, the benefit that I saw in that bill is that a lot of those young men who wind up going through those manhood training camps are some very outstanding young men today.
Yeah.
And a lot of them have turned back to try to do things in the community, so it carried over.
That's right. And that's what we're talking about. That's what we're here. Presenting things that young men can take back and learn from and then come back and do it themselves. Because as we age, and now we can't get out here and do some of those things that we would like to do. I would love to do something like that again. But, you know, that might be a little impossible right now, physically, to do it. But I could sponsor it or back it up or something to that effect. But you're right about that.
That's right.
Now you
One of the things that we could probably do, Bill, on occasion, and I've talked to a number of elder men, is that sometimes, you know, like right now, we don't have the same kind of presence in our community that we used to have as a black man.
That's right.
So what we have to do is restore elder black men to a position of respect, because everywhere you go in the world, old men run it with the support and cooperation of elder women.
Is that right? That's right.
Italian community, German, Jew, French, Swede, Polish, Irish, you name it. Elder men run their community. But
right.
In the black community, a lot of the elder men are no longer given the respect that they should, because they have the answers. We are the ones who have lived long enough and been in every arena that you can think of that have the knowledge and the wisdom to go ahead and pass down. But what takes place a lot of times, if elder men are not shown the respect, then they will just turn around and say, forget it.
Right.
I'm just going. And now, we're not that way. A number of us are not that way. We keep at it, no whether they got a hard, young people got a hard head or not, or folks decide they not necessarily go show us the kind of respect that we would like to have, but we go ahead and do it anyway, because those of us who have been involved consciously for a number of years and that have this experience know that it needs to be done regardless of people's personal attitudes toward us.
Okay, so, you know, keeping into that same vein of conversation, talking about the transformation of things and how they, where do we get that from? I know you were raised in Chicago, I was raised in the Carolinas and New York City, where do you think we got that from? Where did yours come from?
Say that again, Bill.
Where did you get the spirit to do this kind of work? Get that we're saying that we're asking our young boys to listen to what we're saying, and then you go on and do that, and go out there, and then you come back and you help. Where did we get ours from? In my case, you're looking at the 50s. I'm 77, so you're looking at the early 50s and 60s. You said you're 75, so really the same time factor.
Right.
So where are we getting that? Where did you get yours from?
Well, I think I got it from a few people. First of all, from my family, even though I never remember living with my father or my mother, but I had close-knit family of aunts, uncles, grandmother, great-grandmothers, and the push at that time when we were coming up, Bill, you're in that same arena, was to get an education, to go to school, come back, and build your community,
right.
Help your community. A lot of people, however, went to school, got an education, and didn't come back and decided that they were just going to focus on themselves, called trying to bring our community together. To them, seemed to be impossible or just too hard. But I took it to heart, and that's one of the things that I did all the way through from working at the Y when I was a teenager with day camps with young men, and then going to college. And then, you know, when I went to college, I came during the Civil Rights Movement when they allowed let black people in colleges all around the country after the Civil Rights March of 1963, the March on Washington, and also the Birmingham bombing. And that's one of the things that facilitated lots of us to wind up in colleges all over the country. Well, during the first 2 years of college was civil rights. The thing that changed my life and made me look at things totally different is I played three sports in college. But in one of the days, one of the brothers from the basketball team in 1966 had me come into the room and listen to an album by Malcolm X.
Say that again. I'm sorry. An album by what?
Malcolm X.
Oh, okay.
Message to the Grassroots.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And once I heard that, it began. I began to look back at my life and the things that had gone on in my family, things I had never really seen, even though I was looking right at it.
Right.
And what was taking place. And it gave me that understanding of what we had gone through as a people and the need of, and Malcolm gave us the need of what we had to do in order to fix it. You know, the kinds of internal things that we had to do, and also external, it was a term of speaking truth to power. And that's what I've always tried to do, is speak truth to power. You know, but I don't depend on that for us to fix it, because certain things we've had to fix ourselves.
Right. Excellent. And that's a similar path, and I won't go through mine because it's the same as yours. I had
right.
elders. I had elders that were telling me, and even though, like I said, we didn't want to listen all the time, you know, because we had our own agendas, we thought, but you had no choice. And one of the deals was to come back and work in our communities and do what we had to do. And I want you to know, brothers and sisters, we're not talking about writing grants to anybody. We didn't do any of these programs with money from outside. You know, when we in Milwaukee, all of those programs we started, we didn't have any grants. And when the grant
That's
did
right.
come, it cost us trouble. And we ended up almost
That's right.
losing the organization because of the money. But we did that on our own, you know, our own nickels and dimes. We used to have our Saturday, Friday events. And we make money and have fun together as a group, you know. But then at the same time, the money was used to help sponsor the camps. Remember when you and I together, I think it was just you and I, took a group of boys, you remember, to the airport.
Right.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That one?
Right.
And that was sponsored by, I can't remember who, they didn't sponsor it, but they invited us so that the boys could see what happens when you try to bring drugs into the country from another country and how those dogs can pick up. That was new. It was getting new. It just started with those dogs being able to sniff. And so I think we had probably about 8, 9, 10 boys that we took to Chicago at O'Hare to watch how those dogs could pick up the scent. And then they obviously set up some things for us, and we were able to do that. Again, no funding, nobody sponsoring, just men in the community coming together, putting their nickels and dimes to pay for the bus or the transportation or the lunch money that we do that. Okay, all right. So, Tony, we've got another generation now. We got another situation ahead of us. Not real, a lot different, because you still got some young brothers that doing things. I think about the barbershop conversations that they have. Things like that, which has always been a way of reaching young men. I learned a lot from those barbershops on Saturday, sitting there listening to them old guys talk about stuff. So what do we do now? How do we get them to listen now? How do we draw them to the table? They have to be drawn to the table. You know, I got grandsons. I can't always get my grandson to do stuff. I got one. I got a great-grandson that's 16 in high school. And I can't get him to do nothing unless I tell him I'm going to pay him to do something. I said, come over here, I want to pay you to do something. And when he comes over, I use that as an opportunity to get to him. And he listens. And now to the point, he calls me. and say, Grandpa, you need me to do anything? I'm going to come over there for a little while. I say, okay, come on. So what do we do now? How do we do that now with the larger community of young brothers?
Well, what we have to do now, Bill, is we have to reestablish our presence. Like you say, what you're able to do individually,
right?
A lot of men are doing the same thing individually. We just not have put it together as a collective.
Okay.
A lot of us are doing the very same things. But one of the things that I was looking at is like there's a lot of times there's groups out here who are doing good things in our community. But one of the things that I've seen missing is the presence of elder black men at these various events. So mm-hmm. we need to get us a calendar together. We may not be able to make it all, but we need to have a presence at some of these events. Even if we're wearing our masks, making sure that our health is right, but they need to see us. I think we used to have a saying that 100 black men, they will be what they see.
Right, that's right, we did.
Mm-hmm. And so if they don't see us, then they may not necessarily want to be us, because a lot of times, you know, our presence is not there, you know. And what has
that's
to
true.
Happen is we have to keep pushing this insight. You know, Bill, I used to do these, you know, there's other things that we take. I remember when Ralph Holman was head of the Sewage Commission.
Okay, right.
We took a group of boys down there to the deep water tunnels.
Right.
When Tyrone Dumas was head down there at the county.
I remember that.
We went down there and dealt with seeing the courts and how they work. We also went to Penfield Children's Center, so we saw how the children were affected. That their parents had been on drugs, the mothers.
I'll never forget that.
Walk,
I'll never
talk.
Forget that. I will never forget that meeting.
That's Remember that?
Oh, man, I'll never forget that. That's etched in my mind forever.
Yeah. And, you know, we took, who else facilitated for us to go some other places?
Well, there's, you know, we went to the prisons.
We went to
Oxford.
Right.
Took some kids up there. Yeah.
So, and then there's other men who did things, you know what I'm saying? We had a lot of things that some of us that we did together and some things that brothers did. So it behooves us now as elder black men to go ahead and provide the insight for our downline to begin to do the things that we did as well. Now,
right.
It's a little different now.
Yes.
But what takes place is this. Is that a lot of people have gone through the worst. We bottom out.
Yep.
A lot of people have tried. A lot of the young brothers have tried what they're going to do, and they still haven't been able to come up with the answers. And what I'm seeing from a lot of them who have been active out here for an extended period of time, there's a lot of frustration, and a lot of them are attacking each other.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that we did not do as men during our time. We organized and we supported each other's efforts as black men. We made everybody look good no matter what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because what everybody was doing is important, because we really don't have to do nothing. And we got a lot of people out here who don't do nothing as well.
Right. That's why I liked your greeting card, those greeting cards that you created.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a brilliant idea. And the greeting cards were to... the things that we could give our friends, brothers, who have done well, who did something good, who can we can let recognize them, say, man, I thank you. I heard you took a group of kids such and such a place. You know this. You know, maybe I remember a couple of times putting in a couple of dollars in there and say, man, thank you. Keep that up. You know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, you know what that is, Bill. It's like as time went on, I see there where a lot of us. We supported each other's efforts, but as, you know, certain things begin to happen and pushes that, brothers begin to not have a tendency to congratulate each other on their accomplishments.
Right, right.
So the card was simply said, congratulations, brother, on a job well done.
Right.
I want to be the first to compliment
exactly
you.
Exactly.
You know,
right.
And basically, like, so if a person has come out of an AODA program,
mm-hmm.
or if he's had his first child,
mm-hmm.
or if he's graduated from school, or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying? Black men now, we need to congratulate each other on our accomplishments,
yeah.
because basically we have only been programmed to compete against each other.
That's right.
That's where the problem
is. We can't afford to compete against each other.
No, and then we use the language that the society or sometimes our community says, like stuff like deadbeat dad.
Right.
We got to eliminate those kind of negative things from our vocabulary. Because what happens is when you use that and we co-sign other people saying it, then what it does, it creates ill feelings amongst ourselves.
Right.
And then we have to be careful about there's a statement that can go two ways. And that statement is time for black men to step up to the plate. But most of the time, usually we hear that on the negative because we're saying that black men ain't stepping up to the plate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
right.
The reality is you don't know what black men are doing. You know, a lot of us don't know what they're going through.
Yeah, a lot of folks work
quiet. In terms of their families and houses.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Right, you know, so that little term that comes out of Ghana, Jinyame, is that I see what you're doing. I don't know why you're doing it. I ain't going to judge you because only God knows.
Right.
So a lot of times we're talking on hearsay and secondhand and thirdhand and fourthhand information, and we're making all kinds of judgments of people, and we really don't know what the heck is going on.
That's exactly
in their life.
That's exactly, and what they're going through.
But a lot of times we're trying to use those things to make ourselves look good at the next brother's expense.
Right. That's right. By doubting somebody else, and that way you can promote yourself. That's a big part of what's going sometimes out here. And I think it has to be minimized, and I think we have to wait. Like you said, the way we do it is we've got to talk about it to each other. You got to be able to stand up and be able to face it. You know, if you're a victim of that, recognize it and change it, do it better. And I think some of that, you know, nature kind of thing, a lot of us have a tendency, you know, to do those kind of things, to showboat, you know, but it doesn't necessarily really paint them who they really are. They're just caught up into the system of competing and what they were taught to do, you know, by this system of things. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about truth. I want to talk about our women. I want to talk about the pros and cons sometimes of working with women and what we've experienced. You know, in Milwaukee with the many programs that we were trying to run, the plus and the minuses, you know, put it all on the table. I want to talk about that. And then I want to talk about the collaborative effort of working with other institutions in the community, like the Black Church, and working with organizations like, at one point, OIC, you know, in Milwaukee, but it's no longer there. But there are other chapters in the country. We have a diverse audience on our radio. We have people all over the country that are listening right now, but who do still have OIC chapters. And just the Urban League. And how do we do that? Where is that? Let's give a report card on the collaboration of our community with some of the problems that we see out there. Because a lot of times it is driven by funding, and folk are out trying to get that funding. So they're trying to be really seen to do things, and it's not always complete. So let's talk a little bit about that when we come back. And you're listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. I am William Rogers, the host. We are here every Tuesday evening. We have a call-in number, and you can do so at any point if you're listening on the Internet, 215-490-9832. Repeat area code 215-490-9832. You can call us, give us your questions, or when you have comments, we'd like to hear from all of you. I know that many of you that are out there listening have done some unique things. And what we're saying, we're not out here trying to both beat on our chests about the greatness of everything. We're here to talk about our struggles and what has been tried and what has to be tried now to get black men to listen. That's what the program is about tonight. And I have with me my dear brother, Brother Anthony Courtney, who is the CEO of an organization called For My Brothers. He's been operating for a long time. And he's here with me, and we're here to talking about just talking about things that happen. So I really appreciate all of that. As I said to you earlier in the beginning, the Black Reality Think Tank is a historical research network, and we are here to learn, we are here to teach, empower, provide information relating to the history of our people. And we use this medium, this broadcast. We use this time support awakening.com. We use them and our websites as tools to push that together. And so our content and our focus is really the journey of our people, our ancestors. Our goals and objectives to this program is to understand the past, dissect the present, and support implementing a meaningful future for generations to come. And that's what we are doing. We're trying our best. We're working hard to try to make that happen. So we have three other programs that we operate under the Black Reality Think Tank umbrella. We have a program that airs on Thursday called Warrior's Way, Continuing the Fight. The host of that is a brother, Kwasi Kraft, and a very dynamic show, very similar to what we are doing here. He's going to have a very dynamic conversation on this Thursday, where he's going to be dealing with one of the ministers of our city, talking about some of those issues that are facing Milwaukee. We have another program that comes on Saturday morning, Saturday noon. It is a book club discussion that operates on an FM station out of Florida. It's a new program, new station, new network called Harambe Radio. And we host that program with them and then on 3 o'clock we have a program called Black Sister Talk with Sister LaWanda Chambers, and she is doing a very dynamic job of bringing issues that work with women. And then at 6 o'clock we have a program of a group of elders called the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, and they deal with issues involving the elders in our community. Dr. Janine James is the host of that, along with a group of others, Queen Mother Shabaka, Sister Dee Dee Conley is a part of that. And so those are programs, again, continuing to try to bring our community together, use this format in the crisis of this COVID and the fact that we've all had to retreat to our homes and we can't get out and interact like we used to. But at least we can use a format like this and begin to talk to each other and come up with ideas to work to our children. Because they're out there doing it. They're not in the house. They speeding cars up and down the street, robbing stores and fighting each other. So we've got to rescue that still. We need to do that. So that's really what we're doing. That's what I'm saying here tonight. So let's this little quick musical break, and then we'll be right back to talk to Brother Tony Courtney.
I've been standing here on this corner with this brown bag in my hand. And you'd be surprised to find out what I learned about myself and my fellow man. Now you can ask any successful man, black, yellow, red, brown, or white. And if he's honest with you, he's gonna tell you what I'm telling you here is right. With all kinds, we got winners, and y'all, we got losers. Some rich that seems broke, and some are wealthy that seems poor. Some wrong and don't know it, and some right and won't show it. So you're blessed if you can recognize that very rock of a man that does the very best he can. And some of all races and groups of all people, we got some of them that cop out and make many excuses. And sometimes we lay it on our race, not saying it's not difficult. Some blacks blame it on being black. And have you ever thought of all poor people ain't black?
and all black people ain't poor. But have you ever thought maybe you ain't black? Listen, were you the blackest one in your all-black school? Did even the lighter members of your own race point all their black jokes at you? And when you wouldn't be there, pats and bounce back cause you were sick of that mess. Did they call you a bad sport and say you had an inferiority complex? Did this ever happen to you? Well, then maybe you ain't black. Did the girls ever tell you, step back, black cat, you can't shine. I got a yellow cat to beat your time. This didn't happen to you? Well, then maybe you ain't black. Maybe what you think is real ain't real. You ought to sit back and start listening how a black person really feels. If things have changed so much with us today, why do I still see the light and dark of our own race going separate ways? By teaching the black to hate the white, don't you know you're teaching the dark to hate the light? And if you've done all you could today, get you some rest, cause there's more to do tomorrow. You know, sometimes we get frustrated because we don't have a plan. And one of the main reasons we can't get what we think we want is because we really don't know definitely what we really want. But we gotta beat that. And sometimes we adhere to the mother of violence, which is fear. Show me a violent man and I'll show you a man who's frustrated and scared to death. And he's scared of two things. Scared that something or someone will keep his life from being the way he wants it. Or he's afraid that he don't have the mental capacity to overcome those obstacles. And sometimes it's not anything outside the person. It's what's inside him that's holding him back. It reminds me of the story of the boy and his dog. You see, a little boy tied his dog to a pole, but he didn't tie it well. And while he was playing with his friends, the rope came loose and fell. And the dog really wanted to play, but instead he howled and cried. And he stayed right there in the very same spot, because he thought he was tied. As the little boy came back, saw the rope loose and all, he patted his pet on the head and said, "You're a good dog." But the boy, being the master, he had fun and was satisfied. And the dog could have too, but he thought he was tired. As I look at the servants and the masters of men, y'all, I see that same story happening over and over, time and again. Some build and use their minds, and they are being satisfied. And others are standing still and confused and crying, because they think they are tired. Well, almost done told y'all now. Done told you to bed. And you gotta go on out there and do the rest. But I found out people hear what they wanna hear, when they wanna hear, why they wanna hear, where they wanna hear, and from who they wanna hear from. Almost done told y'all now. Done told you the best. It's up to you. You gotta go on out there and do the rest. I'm gonna be seeing you.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We are back, sisters and brothers. We are talking with a very dear brother out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, whose name is Brother Anthony Courtney. He is the CEO of an organization called For My Brothers. And we wanted to see, and we are dealing with the topic, Black Man, Listen. And we are hoping tonight that we can walk away with something that will help us continue to fight this fight and to make things change in the way that we know will be productive for our children to come. Okay, so Tony, I want to start off this second half of our program by asking you about our sisters. What is it that we can say to black women that can build that confidence back again that I think has gotten lost in some areas of our community? We've lost that support that we need from that womb. That womb is the basis of all human life. I mean, that's where everything is done. That's where all the production work is done. That's the co-creator to God. And we've lost that connection, some of us, and we're not able to grasp it. What are you, from your perspective, as we work with boys and men who are their byproducts, what is it that we need to do and say to get back with our women?
Well, one of the things, Bill, is this, is our women don't know how much power they actually have. And what we have to do is even go back historically to let them, give them some insight in terms of how we function when we ran our own world as black men and black women. There is, if they want to Google, there is a site that they can go to called Traditional African Matrilineal Society. I'll say that again. Traditional African Matrilineal Society, okay? And also, you know, in our teachings that we got from the society that I belong to, our CSS Society, the head of our society, Shekhar Shekhar, who has also been on Time for Awakening, gave us a concept called the word and the power, okay? And that concept is that basically from us as men, what comes out of our mouths makes a difference. We are able to talk our women into doing things that are beneficial and also things that are non-beneficial. Our words, and we have seen that over the years, right? And what comes out of our mouth inspires, especially if we're doing the right thing. So to give you an example, if you go back and you look at traditional African matrilineal societies, one of the things that you find is that oftentimes the women chose the chief, not the men. Because women are more inclined to take into account the men, the women, and the children.
That's true.
Where a lot of times as men, we get blinded by our need to compete because we think it's necessary that we have to have money, status, and power in order to get certain things done. So that's what we compete amongst ourselves. So oftentimes we will bypass what's beneficial to the entire family to go for those things that we feel is going to put us in a position, you know, in that competition. Okay. Now, how do we, how have I seen that carried over to today? Take, for instance, the civil rights movement. When we talk about the Montgomery bus boycott was a primary example. Okay. You had Dr. King, E.D. Nixon, Fred Gray, NAACP, Fred Shuttlesworth. All of these brothers and a number of them, they would be at the churches, and they would be running down what needed to take place. In those churches, there were about 75% or 80% women in that audience, okay? Once the brothers gave the word, then what took place, you can look it up historically, Joanne Robinson, I can't think of another sister, they went and they mimeographed 40,000 flyers to pass out to the women and men. But what happened is the women stopped going riding the bus. Now, white women, who our women had been feeding and taking care of their children, cleaning their house, washing their clothes, they had to come and pick our women up. Because they weren't used to doing that kind of work, neither were they going to do it.
Right.
And that's why, in a little over a year, the bus boycott was over. So as men, we gave the word, and the women carried out. They had the power. It still works the same way today, Bill. How many black churches would exist in America if black women weren't in them?
It's the truth.
We wouldn't have any, would we?
That's right. And they also, their names are on the mortgages of a lot of those churches.
That's right. And look at the roles that they play, the Convalescence Committee. I mean, how many other organizations out here in the black community, no matter how much they talk, how many of them have a Convalescence Committee to go and look at this, look at the sick and the shut-in? Mm-hmm. The Missionary Societies. When I was growing up in church, they were still raising money, my auntie and them, and they were sending money to Africa in various places, right? The Sunday schools, the gospel choir, senior choir, whatever. I mean, all of these different organizations that exist. And men participate in heading up organization. That's why historically the church had worked very well, because the agenda was saving souls, uplifting the people, feeding the homeless. But now we moved into prosperity ministries, and so a lot of people don't have to do nothing but give a little money, and then a lot of times they determine where they sit in the church. My goodness, you know, what have we gone through? Right. You know, we not dealing with saving souls anymore.
That's right.
And the women basically facilitate all of this. But 95% of them, I bet you, go pick up a copy of the Milwaukee Times. 95% of those churches in that paper, and there's over 100-plus churches, I don't care, wherever you should go in the country, those churches have a black male pastor.
Right, right.
Ain't that something?
That's right. That's
so
true.
We may give the word, but the women got the power.
Right. That's right.
But that also, how we had what we call equal governance in African societies. The queen mother could check the king in public, but nobody else could.
Mm.
It's just like in our families. You see what I'm saying? Grandma in our family, that was the glue in my family, my great-grandma as I was growing up.
That's right.
Everybody knew where they were supposed to be at certain times of year, no matter what else you did afterwards. But you better be at grandma, great-grandma's house for Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. for Christmas, for Easter, for Mother's Day. Now, you go ahead and the other families could do their things, but that was the place you gathered.
Right. So let me ask, do you think we have moved them away from us? Do we think that they now are not even wanting to reach out anymore and work in a lot of cases with brother? And I base that on the fact that women are organizing themselves with their folk. You got women churches run strictly by women. Women organizations run strictly by. Is that a message to the brothers that you know you don't want to work and you haven't worked with us cooperatives, so we don't need you? We're going to work somewhere else. We're going to do other things. Is that an example of that?
Well, it could be, Bill, but I don't think that that's going to fly because, see,
okay.
Wherever you go, let me say it again, wherever you go in the world, men run their community with the support and cooperation of their women. Chinese men run the Chinese community with the support and cooperation of Chinese women.
Right.
German men run the German community with the support and cooperation of German women. Italian men run the Italian community with the support and cooperation of Italian women. We can go Polish, French, we can go all the way down. Who runs the black community?
Mm-hmm.
The white man.
Right.
So whatever our women do in terms of organize, and they should do that, because there needs to be conversations, not only just in terms of personal development and personal, you know, moving up, but also how they have those conversations of how they're going to recapture our men so that we can work together in terms of equal governance.
Right, right.
See, right now, look what white women are going to. You know, the white man said, okay, you could be Roe v. Wade for X amount of years. Now they're coming to take all that back, ain't they?
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true.
You see, and what happens a lot of times in a patrilineal society, which is a society which we live in where might makes right, not right makes might, is our women and their women are continuously appealing to men to be equal. Okay, well, how does that work? Be equal? Okay, well, let me think about it. That's what they do in the society as men.
Right.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
We'll pass a law. You can be equal for X amount of years and we'll revisit. Well, the first problem is that the women should have never went to the men in the first place to ask about equality.
Right.
Because if you come to me and asking me for equality, you already told me you ain't equal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that didn't happen in our society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have history where women ran in our history, ran great cultures, our great cultures and stuff.
Right.
And men recognized it because we had a equal governance way. We knew that some women were, you couldn't take things away from them because they were women. You know. So yeah, it's reflected our society, but it's continuously being pushed that on this division.
Good. Yeah.
What happens is,
I was gonna say the reason I asked that, and do that because, you know, we're talking about bringing healing to our community to bring our male children to the table to get them to listen, but it has to be done with the mother support as well. And I base that on I've got a large children, great grandchildren pool of people. And I watched them doing things. I lost two of my daughters to illness. But there's grandkids, and I'm watching them. I have one daughter left that has children, and I'm watching how they operate. If I have to do some things with them or get to them, I have to get to the mother first.
Right.
I have to tell her, look, I want to talk to such and such, and I want to get him together. So would you, in your own way, not don't make him do it, fix it so that he can come and want to talk to me. And then she'll call me back. She said, okay, call him now. And I'll call him, and it's wide open. Whereas before, he might dodge me and won't answer his phone because he knows my number picks up. And I'm speaking to one grandson in particular, you know, when I'm trying to get him because he's done something, you know, he ain't no business. They do that. And then even the younger ones, the same way. I have to get to the mother and ask her to tell them that when they come over here, this is what's going to happen. Because they're going to defy me to a certain extent. So I have to get her. So that's the reason why I'm asking that question, is that they have to be brought into the equation, you know, in order to make the correcting and the healing that needs to be done. One last thing. A lot of times, as a social scientist observing life the way it goes, I've noticed before the COVID, I used to go to the supermarket. At that time, I was living in Atlanta, and I used to watch. I used to go to this one supermarket that had a large variety of foreign food and Hispanic food, kind of like the one over on the South Side. They had that, I can't think of the name of it now, the big Spanish market where people go there. And I would notice that the women that were there, all of the men would be with them shopping. That would be the obviously the wife or the mate and the father. And they would be picking the grocery together. I would watch them do that. I just observing that. And then I looked around and I said, let me see how many black men I see in here doing that. And I'd kind of walk around a little bit and watch that. And then when I'd go in other supermarkets, and I didn't see that. In the black supermarket, it was mostly women doing all the shopping. The men, now some were there, but majority-wise. And I said, now what is that? Where does that come from? What does that mean? And that's kind of why I'm asking that question when we talk about healing. Because it obviously what it is, I think that has to be brought back to the table. How do you see that?
Well, just from a historical standpoint, and also, Bill, when I went to Ghana in 1995,
okay,
spent 2 weeks there, women have always controlled the marketplace in terms of food and stuff.
Okay, okay.
And when Kwame Nkrumah came to power, one of the things that he did is he took the marketplace from the women and gave it to the men. And you know what the result of that was?
Mm-hmm. What was that?
The women stopped shopping. Mm. So he had to turn around and give the marketplace right back to the women.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you're talking about your grandchildren, one of the things I did when I was raising my sons, okay, they were here at the house, is I always allowed their friends to come over. All right?
Okay.
My wife and I, we allowed their friends. So sometimes you may not be able to reach your particular child, but that you can reach as friends a lot of times, because they may not even have a man in their lives, but they've got friends.
That's true.
And a lot of times you can reach their friends faster than you can reach them, because they done heard you saying the same thing to them over and over and over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what happens, their friends ain't heard it. They ain't had that insight. So they might get something from you that they can use when they go back home. And then a lot of times what they would do is like my friend, my sons, I used to tell them, y'all can't get away with nothing. But see, what they didn't know, their friends would tell on them. Because if they like me, they'd tell on them.
Right, exactly.
I wouldn't say that's where I got it from. You know, so what takes place is that a lot of these young men, they grow up with friends that they care about, love at an early age, be with all the time. That becomes their peer group.
Right.
So you have to capture the peer group, not just try to save your son. You got to save the group.
Right.
And that's what we have to do.
You have to do the peer group. Right. That's exactly right. And I agree with that. You remember Philip Scott. You remember Phil Scott from Arizona?
He lives there. Right, I know Phil.
Yeah. Phil invited me up to his house one day, one Saturday morning. And, you know, he has two sons, And he had all his sons go down in the basement of the house, friends, and even the daughter came down. So it was about 15, 20 boys down there. And he wanted me to do a little piece with them. And we started off with the last poets. And I'll say the word because it's a, you know, it's in the album, Niggas Afraid of Revolution, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we started off with that. And they had, none of them had never heard it. They had never heard that before.
Right.
And we were able to take that, and it was like you could hear a pin drop from after that. And you're right. These were all, I didn't know any of these boys. I only knew Phil's son. That was it. And it was a powerful, powerful kind of discussion. Well, Tony, I'm going to open up the lines a little bit. Let's see if we got some questions. We got some people that are on. That I know might want to say something or ask you some questions. Is that okay with you?
That's fine.
Okay. All right. Let me go here to Indianapolis. There's a number here from Indianapolis, 317-869. Caller, would you like to ask the question, say something, or are you just listening?
Not at this time. I'm just listening.
Okay. Thank you so much for being here, too. Thank you. We have a caller from Washington, D.C., 240-351. Would you like to say something, or are you just listening, caller?
Yeah, I would like to comment on the brother that just spoke.
Yes.
As far as, you know, the women back in the day doing the shopping, and, you know, a lot of times we were subjected to, as far as men, having to work 6 to 7 days a week.
Right.
So the women would naturally be the only ones we see in the marketplace. But in my case, my mother would go to the grocery store, but every Saturday, my father and my brother, we would go to the country market.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, get certain things, eggs, something my mother didn't get at the grocery store. So, you know, it's not about the male not wanting to shop with the wife. It was just the circumstances that he was under at the time.
Gotcha. Okay. I just wanted to see how other people saw that. Okay. That's good. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Great. Thank you. Thank you for that. Let's go to Greensboro, North Carolina, 336-621.
Yes. Peace, Hotep. How are you doing, Dr. Rogers?
Doing great, my sister. How you doing today?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm okay. Excuse me. I love this show. It's just fantastic. This broadcast, rather.
Thank you.
It's fantastic. The dialogue is just so on point.
Yes.
So thank you to your guests. And Dr. Rogers, now I get more of an idea of the work that you've done, you know, outside of the class.
Right, right.
Yes, yes, yes. Serious revolutionary. So what I want to say is that I came on, I think, maybe 30 minutes in or something, so I don't know if this was covered,
right.
But,
right.
You know, all over this nation and all over the world, they're taking our men off the streets, away from black women. And what it's doing is forcing black women to step up and have to do things that normally we did with our men, mm-hmm. or that our men normally did. I remember when I was growing up, thankfully I had two parents, and my parents went shopping every Saturday together. They went partying together, you know. Every they fought, you know, got sober. Everything they did together.
Sister Benicia, do you have on a computer or something?
No, because I hear the echo.
Yeah,
too.
I'm hearing that reverb. Somebody might be have their computer on and listening through the phone, and that will always create that reverb. Anybody does have that, could you please mute the computer if you're on the phone? Thank you. Okay, go right here and see what we can get.
Okay, is that any better?
Okay, that's better. I don't hear any feedback now. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, so I grew up in an environment where my parents did everything together. And as a result, my two brothers are the same way. They're mm-hmm. married for many years. My parents were married for many years. And both my brothers are married for around 30 years. Doing everything together with their wives, the shopping, the working with the children, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So once our men started being taken off the streets deliberately with the drugs, the heroin especially, and crack and mass incarceration, women were forced to step up mm-hmm. and do what, you know, normally we wouldn't do alone. So I just want to say that so much of this is a part of, you know, this white pathological social engineering. You know, you take the man out of the community, you know, everything gets confused.
Right.
And even the children, you know, when a woman becomes overwhelmed and can't parent anymore, then a young boy will step up and try to be a man. He doesn't know what he's doing, and he doesn't have any example. So, you know, so much of what's going on with us goes right back to white pathology and the attacks, you know, against the black family. But I love that you all are sharing our ways. Mm-hmm. They're not the old ways. These are our ways.
Our ways, that's true.
Yes, and it's the African way. It's the native way. And so I just want more young people to hear what we have done. Because when we do for ourselves, we always do better. Always right. did, always will.
That's right. Thank you so much, sister. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Always. Okay. I have a caller here from Maryland, 240-224. Would you like to say something, or are you just listening? 240.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Yes. My name is Angela Barksdale.
Hi. Hey, Ms. Barksdale.
And hi. This is my third time on the call, and a friend of mine called me and said, just call this number and listen in. A friend of mine named Larry, who just spoke before the lady spoke.
Great.
And we have these conversations on a regular. And I always go back to my Mata days. I don't like to use the term former Mata member. Once you're Mata, you're always Mata.
Mm-hmm.
And you're born Mata, which is, you know, in your spirit, the blood that runs through your veins, mm-hmm. that we are here. Our purpose is to give and buy black and to support one another and to lift our race up. And because we are a mighty race.
Yes, we are.
A mighty race.
Yes,
and when I joined Mata, that was the best thing. It just brought that out of me. And no one else in my family has that, what I call Mata spirit.
Right.
And I don't know where I got it from. My parents didn't have it, you know, none of my siblings. But I was considered the renegade. And for such a time as this, I really enjoyed being able to come to this call and listen in, and we'll continue to make comments, you know, when I feel it. And I feel it. I felt it on all the calls thus far, and I really like what I hear.
Thank you so much. Yes.
So thank you for having this platform, and just keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Brother Tony, would you like to add anything to Sister's comment?
Yes, you know, it's like all of us have a destiny, and we have many different kinds of people within our families, but some people, once they hear something in terms of truth, they cannot do anything but move to live toward their truth. But one thing about truth is once you know it, you can't not know it.
Right.
You cannot do anything about it if you choose to, but you can't never not know it. You know, so what happens is, as various things change in life, you still be on that road to truth because you know what it is, and you're not be like a lot of the people where if you don't know where you're going, any road to get you there is that you wind up staying focused on that truth. And I was a member of my time when it came out as well, you know, and it awakened a lot of people. And what happens is that once you consciously embrace, you know, our culture, our history, then you got to keep moving along those lines. Now, we may be doing different things in different arenas, mm-hmm. but it's always just like the puzzle that we talked about, Bill, you know, the jigsaw puzzle of black unity. We
yes.
all in it. We just be in different parts of it. And we've used that. I mean, you used it once in your classroom.
Yes.
In terms of the puzzle.
That's right. That's exactly right. Okay. Thank you. Brother Tony, you'll recognize this next voice. He's a good brother that has well familiar to you and everybody in the Milwaukee community. Really appreciate it. He hadn't been on for a while, but I'm so happy that he's here. Brother James Pugh, Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah.
Yeah, brother.
Yes, Tony, I'm enjoying what you're saying. And in fact, your approach seems to be pretty sophisticated. So I'd like for you to elaborate. You talk about the restoration of the role of elders in our community, but you go beyond that because you seem to suggest that that the elders themselves can have different approaches. And the other little part of that is that most other people, they assume that the way to solve our problems is we need to start off with some brand new little babies and raise them up, you know, to be the way we want. And your approach seems to be different. So could you talk about that a little?
Yes, I'd like to say that, you know,
And by the way, just one other thing, you didn't say anything about your puzzle theory because I think that's
useful. Yeah. I remember that puzzle box theory.
Let me just say something about the approach, first of all, is our young men, if they keep on living at whatever age they are, they can only grow up to be elder men like us. What else can they grow up to be?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else. Now, Supreme Omukunde, who is one of the county supervisors, he had a statement that he said a lot of us men grow up to be olders, but they don't grow up to be elders. Because they have not changed their ways and don't influence the community like they should in terms of their level of participation, however that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote this little booklet, this little 8-page booklet. Oh, I think it might have been the first one I wrote called The Jigsaw Puzzle of Black Unity. And that came out of my spirit from listening to my great-grandmother who could neither read nor write. And she used to always have a saying that, don't you never think you know better than nobody else.
Mm.
Now, I'm going to tell you when I first heard that. And then back in the day when I was growing up in Chicago and black was not popular, there was a little saying that went, when you're white, you're right, you're yellow, you're mellow. If you're brown, stick around. And if you're black, you're back.
That's right.
And I was one of the lighter children in the family. And great-grandmother would see how her daughters and other people would respond to me differently than they would to have my brother, who was a little darker, okay? And so one day, I don't know what was happening, and great-grandma got me one day, and she said, you little shit-colored nigga, don't you never think you know better than nobody else? And I'm like, damn, what did I do? But that stuck with me. And so what happens, one of the byproducts of that is that a lot of the women that I became more so looked at attractive was darker women. Mm-hmm. You know, because great grandmother, I was like, and later on, I found out, you know, through his story, what the color caste system was and the preferential treatment. Yeah, but that, it was like, wow, I didn't really understand it at the time. I just thought, yeah, what did I do was wrong? But the jigsaw puzzle came out of my spirit by what my great grandmother said. And what I said is that it was simply this. If I had a 1,000-piece puzzle and I took the box top off, you wouldn't know what the picture was, but you could still put the puzzle together. And it's just like us as black people. Mm-hmm. When we got our puzzle, somebody had taken the box top off that says, I am because we are working together. And on the box top, they put that picture that says, go for yourself. Don't worry about nobody else. Get yours. And so when many of us who were raised in this society, when we start putting our puzzle together to go ahead, I am because we are, it didn't look right. So how do you put a puzzle together if you haven't seen what's on the box top? Mm-hmm. Well, in most cases, even if we haven't seen the box top, we understand certain principles. Most of us would put the square pieces together, the corners, as they would say. But even when if you put all the corners in place, it still don't tell you what the picture is. Mm-hmm. So let's say that corners represent leadership in our community. Some leadership looks east, some looks west, some looks south, some looks north. The role of leadership to be able to go out, get the information as needed, bring it back to our community, and facilitate the putting together of our people, our community, or in that case, the puzzle. When you put a puzzle together, you don't start here and work straight across, work straight east or straight north or straight south or straight west. We work with colors and shapes, a little bit here and a little bit there. Pretty soon we got enough pieces in place that long before the puzzle is finished, we know what the picture going to be. Mm-hmm. Well, now we got 999 pieces in place. But before that, when I was picking them up one at a time, I would ask people, say, well, look at this piece here. Tell me what the picture going to be when I put the other 999 pieces together with it. Did they tell me? They say no. I pick up another piece. How about this piece? And I keep going. I say, look, I can pick them all up one at a time. You can guess 999 times, if not 1,000, and still be wrong. Because on the box top, it could be a picture of seals on the desert, which don't make no sense, which is the same in this society. When we talk about, I'm going to get mine, and you ain't gonna, you don't worry about you getting yours. You get blah, 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 blah. That ain't going to work for us as people of African descent. You know, we are people that's dependent on interdependence. So now we got 999 pieces in place. The last piece on the table, I put it in, puzzle complete. But you've been knowing what the puzzle is, and we've been knowing what the picture's supposed to be. So, well, I like this puzzle, so I'm going to do it another 999 times.
Right.
Now, here come the questions. Which piece is first in a 1,000-piece puzzle? Whichever one you pick up. Because if I do it 1,000 times, I can start with a different piece every time. Which piece is last? Mm-hmm. The last one I finish with. Mm-hmm. But they can all be last. Which piece is the most important? None of them.
None.
Because when we was picking them up one at a time, none of us told us what the picture was going to be. So it goes right back to what my great-grandmother said, who could neither read nor write. Don't you never think you know better than nobody else, because we just one piece of the puzzle.
That's right.
And whatever happens in that puzzle, it affects us all, and we see that when certain things may hit us in different parts of the community, we're affected by it all. Other people don't make excuses about what the things that happen in their community, whether they're good or bad. They go out and kill up a bunch of people, but we associate our action by us. We attach it to the whole race.
Right.
They don't. Other groups don't do that, and that's the importance of the puzzle. We all come here with talent, skills, and ability that's supposed to be used for the facilitation of our community. What I do or what you do, Bill or James, and all of us have been active, is not more important than what anybody else does.
That's right. That's exactly right. Thank you so much, Brother Pugh, for raising that question, you know, and getting to talk about it. I forgot about the puzzle box theory. I ended up borrowing that from you, Mr. Courtney, and using that in my classrooms.
I remember.
University of Wisconsin. Yeah, that was excellent. Mm-hmm. And it mesmerized those students. And, you know, mostly, as you know, 80 to 90% of my students were white. because, you know, it's called White University. So they were blown out by that, and they thought that that was a powerful concept to use and talk about it. I've got one sister 919 Durham, North Carolina 477. Sister Ann, you want to say something, or you just listening?
I'm just listening.
Okay, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Dr. Rogers?
Doing great. Doing great. Okay. Good. Brother Kwasi Kraft, Warrior's Way, continuing to fight. How you doing, Brother Kwasi?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How's it going? Hotep, everybody. Hey, Baba Courtney, how you doing?
Fine, brother. How you doing?
Great. Good to hear you. Good to hear you.
Yes, indeed.
Big conversation tonight. I am just listening, enjoying, and just gathering this information. It's awesome.
Now, you're going to be talking with Brother Mark Cross.
Mark Fossey,
I'm sorry, Mark.
Yeah, I'll be with him tomorrow night. We're going to be having a discussion. I think some of the people heard about what happened with a lot of the ministers having to pay these fines and with the churches, the $10,000 to $20,000. We're going to kind of touch basis on some of that as well. And just talk about a lot of the goings on and so forth with the violence in the community, the psychological, from a psychological approach. He's a clinical psychiatrist, so looking forward to that. And from a religious perspective, also.
Okay.
Looking forward to that conference.
Great, great. Well, Brother Kwasi, appreciate that. Hold it just a minute. His program comes on at 6 o'clock on Thursday evening, 6 o'clock Central Time, and it airs on the Blog Talk Radio. It is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank network of programs. You can go to our website, Facebook website, Black Reality Think Tank website on Facebook, and you can get the link to go in and listen to Brother Kwasi's program. Very dynamic conversation that he presents each Thursday night. So thank you so much. I was getting ready to. I see Brother Lush. I know he had come on and come off. Brother Lush from Montgomery, Alabama. Brother Lush, any questions, or are you just listening? I know you were on before.
I'm multitasking, man. Something has come up on Tuesday nights, and I had to bounce back and forth. But I just want to say that I'm with you, please bear with me. I'll make up for it. How about this on Thursday for Brother Kwasi's program as well? How about that?
All right. And listen, thanks so much. Brother Lush, you sent us a flyer around, and you talked about something about healing. Do you recall that quote that you can give our audience? Because I thought it was very profound.
The quote basically says that if trauma has been passed through generations, then so is a healing, and so basically that's what it says. It's not just a one-sided issue that we need to focus on and just the trauma.
Right.
The other part of that is that the healing has also been brought through our generations too, as well, that we need to exercise and institute.
Beautiful, beautiful. Tony, any thoughts about that? He says
the brother is correct. I'd like to say, yeah, he's correct. And one of the things that we've been taught is this, is that healing is in the presence. You know, there's all kinds of things that have happened to us as people of African descent. In our memories, things that traumatized us when I were children, the people that we lost, we love, all kinds of things. But there were also a lot of good things that that took place. And what we have to do is to bring the good past to the present, because we are living in the present. And oftentimes, let's say when we got with friends and we get together and talk, Bill, family members or friends, and we talk about the good things and the good times, that is one of the things that helps to heal us in the present.
That's true.
So, yes, we know about some of those other things that took place, but you always want to keep your
your memories bring them to the present.
Yes.
You know, when I got back with fellas I went to school with, we get to talk about good times and what we did, and we laughed, and you know, that laughter is healing in
right.
itself.
It is. It really
is. So what happens, especially now when our people, there's a lot of crazy things going on, a lot of depression, a lot of anger. We have to constantly remind our people. And one of the things I want to suggest is that if people are on Zoom, get your family and have them weekly or biweekly or monthly Zoom meetings with families and talk about the good things, what such and such did, the crazy things they did, and, you know, that we could all laugh at.
Right.
Because what we got to do is we're going to have to laugh our way through this.
Yes,
all right? Because conditions dictate work, but we control the things that we bring into our lives in terms of our memories and bring those past good memories to the present.
Right. Exactly. Exactly right. And you're so right. And it's and things are going so swiftly. It's like, you know, we always know you're here today and you're going tomorrow. And that's becoming even much of a harsher reality now as I listen to families talk about. I just talked to my cousin last night on the phone. How could he be dead? Well, it's,
right.
It's the way it goes. You know, it's the way it happens. I even heard somebody was saying that about our dear friend, Brother Ron Johnson. You know, because he died of a heart attack, but he was in the house by himself. And they had to end up getting the police to go there and find out and break into his house to see if everything was okay. And according to that article, they said he was in there dead. And obviously, I thought about that in relationship to all of the things that, you know, he had done in our community, and that the fact that he would have to spend these last years like that. But that's not always a fault. I mean, because I live alone. And I don't hear from my family every day, and they don't call me every day. So I don't know what would happen in my case. You know, it's just to be something the same way. But anyway, we need to, you're right, I like that idea. We need to reach out and find some ways to do that and stay in touch with each other so that we can, you know, because these are definitely some different times, really, really different times. So, Tony, any closing words? We got about 3 minutes left. Anything you want to say? You know, the subject was Black Man Listen. So what do you think? Where do we go from here?
Well, I'd just like to close by saying that what we have tried to do in terms of addressing all of the things that have taken place in our community continuously, we have tried to do everything physically and mentally. So when we look at that triangle that says body, mind, but there's another part of it that says spirit. And what takes place is that when our spirit is high, we can come up with the answers to what we need to address our conditions. If they break your spirit, then you can't fight in your own behalf because you're beat before you even get started. The one thing I can say about you, Bill, and a number of other brothers out here in the community and sisters that have been active over the years is that you have not allowed for your spirit to be broken despite the adversities that we have had to face in our lives individually, collectively. Our spirits are still there.
That's right.
And within our youth, the spirit is there. We just have to make sure that what we have, we pass on. Brother Ron was a great brother, knew him for many years, was totally dedicated to the upliftment of the Black community. And the one thing about the African view of the world that is quite different, whereas in Western culture, there's a born date and there's a death date, but that's linear. But we know that from the African view of life, we lose nothing but the physical body, and the spirit goes on to come back at a different time and a different life. And I know that because I've heard old women say when they look at babies, that child has been here before.
Been here before.
And that's an old
that
soul.
That's right. That's right.
Is that right?
That's right. That's right. Well, Tony, I just want to let you know, my brother, I love you. I've always appreciated you and your work and what you've done. I'm so happy that we could have this conversation tonight. And whatever the future holds, at least if if I have to leave here before you do, I always want you to know I love you and love the work that you've done, and I've enjoyed being with you these years. I appreciate what you've done for our community. And so I want to pass that on. So this way,
and it's the same for you, brother. I love you, and I appreciate the work that you do, and I still do it.
Thank you.
Because it is not anything other than even able to get the word out. We know, never know what we say that comes out of our mouth that will help to change people's lives.
That's exactly right. Right. And then, ladies and gentlemen, thank all of you for being on. Those of you who have been here, some of you have been here for the first time, I appreciate you. Thank you, Brother Pugh, for coming on and listening. And being with us today and your conversation, and those sisters from Maryland, Sister Bonisa, always appreciate you and what you do. Sister Ann, you're right there with us. You may not say much, but you're there. And I got a brother in there from North Carolina. He doesn't say much. He's actually at work. He's at his shop. And he has to mute his phone because he has customers coming in and out, but he listens every week. And he's on. Brother, I appreciate you. And our brother from Indianapolis, Brother Lush, you know we love you.
I share. And I've learned from you, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Our sister from Gaithersburg, Merlin, appreciate that. I thank all of you. So have a wonderful week, folks. We'll be back next week with some more conversation and things that we can do to build our community. Thank you, and have a wonderful, wonderful night.
Faces.